following podcast is a part of RadioMisfits.com.
Welcome to Misfits Making It. We're oddballs and we're doing cool stuff. I'm your host, Lauren Lojudice. This is the podcast version of the comedy shows I host around New York City and on the road, the Misfit Variety Show, and all the shows at the Peach Club Misfit Comedy Space down in Little Italy. So listen, how's it going in your Misfit world? Last week, I was talking a lot about being really nervous of going to this wedding and seeing some cousins who were not exactly like the champions of my weirdness. And, you know, it was definitely not as horrible as I thought it would be. It was not at all. I think sometimes, like, part of yourself is still hanging on to the thing that they said to you way back when, and they've moved on and don't care and are different people now and somewhat have evolved. But I think it's like part of myself is still a lot of unresolved anger. And yes, I'm in therapy. So it was great. And, you know, some of it was like oddly comforting. I mean, obviously, I'm not going to like become best friends with people who, like, there's no way we're going to see eye to eye on so many things. And there's a lot of, like, lifestyle choices that they judge me for. But there was, like, an odd comfort in that, like, you know, they've seen me, they've known me through the years. So, like, you know, it's something about, like, people witnessing you and then seeing them and being like, okay, you know, it hasn't always gone the greatest between us, but, like, you know, I've known you for a long time and there's something oddly comforting in that. So yes. So it was good. It was not as bad as I thought it would be. It was actually quite positive. So that was cool. Yay. And I will ring the clan horn for that. Before we get to our interview with Shelley Lewis, we're going to do a podcast shout out. We have a growing community of other Misfit podcast friends. And today we're going to tell you about What's It Like to Podcast. If you've ever wondered what it's like to summit Mount Everest, win an Olympic gold medal, or be put in prison for a murder you didn't commit, then this is the podcast where you can listen to stories how that has happened. Elizabeth Pearson Gar is the host, and she gets into interesting conversations with people who've gone through some things. I think we got something in common. And you'll come away from this with a lot of ideas you can apply to your own life. It's available everywhere you get your podcasts. I also wanted to do another shout out of sorts because, you know, we're growing a community and there is someone in our community going through some things. It's our esteemed editor, Annie McKurchian. She's been working with me for, wow, I guess this is like 2 years going on, maybe three. Incredible person to work with, always like very communicative, very open, very supportive. And she's not in the U.S. She is in Armenia. And a few weeks ago, she was like, I don't know if I can get you the podcast on time because there's a war. And I know, like, what war? There's so many of them right now. But yeah, there is a conflict going on between Armenia and Azerbaijan. And it's, you know, it's intense. Things have settled down, but still tense. And so they are doing some work. She and some other people have put together an organization called the Green Cramp Educational NGO. And they are raising awareness on environmental protection, human rights, culture, and innovation through educational activities with youth. And so if you would like to support the work that they're doing around this, they have a Facebook page, which is in Armenian, and they, right now it's hard to like create channels in order to create donations. And so we were brainstorming, like, if people wanted to support this, how can they do that? And the only thing we can come up with is if you Venmo me and then I pass it on to her. I know this is not the best situation, but it's, you know, there's these crazy circumstances. This is what we have. They will provide you with photos of their work and seeing your donations literally go in action. So if you would like to donate, my Venmo is at Lauren Logi, L-O-G-I, and I will connect you with everyone and make you feel happy for helping out good people doing good things in crazy situations. Man, this is a crazy world. So every moment that you are happy and peaceful, just be grateful, because we never know what is going to change. It's that nuts. One more piece of business before we get into the interview. I promise it's coming. Is that if you like the podcast, please rate and review us. Social proof works for misfits, especially because misfits trust other misfits to know what's good. You can also keep up with us by signing up at Lauren Logi, LaurenLogi.com, or you could sponsor a podcast. We're making it accessible for individuals to sponsor a podcast episode. We have been putting out podcasts once a week for 6 weeks, and then we're going to go to every other week. We would do it more often if we had some sponsorship, and honestly, this is just paying Ani to help us edit more podcasts. So if you'd like to sponsor, go to laurenlogi.com, click on listen podcast, and contact us there. Great. So I am so excited to bring you this interview with director Shelley Lewis. She has won tons of awards for her work in directing. She's done tons of commercials, and these are not just like a commercial, you think a throwaway commercial. These are like mini short films that will make you laugh and make you cry and make you be like, how the F did they do that? Her work is incredible, and so is her story. So let's give it up for director Shelley Lewis. Thank you, Shelley Lewis, for joining us on Misfits Making It.
Thank you for having me.
So, Shelley, I just watched a bunch of your commercials and I laughed. I cried. It was just so gorgeous. Your work just run the gamut of so many interesting things you've made so effective in like 30 seconds. How did you get here?
Well, thank you for the compliment. So it's sort of interesting, as you know, doing all these interviews, there is no straight journey for creative world. Mm-hmm. And so I originally went to university, did my degree in philosophy, which, you know, has no relevance on what I do now, really. Although the thinking part.
Yeah, for sure.
Definitely about thinking. But I really, after that, I decided I wanted to go into advertising. And I was at more of a traditional school. And so on a whim, I applied to art college because I knew they had an advertising program, and I got in. Wow. And next thing I knew, I was moving to Toronto, going to a new school. And so I did that for a few years and then graduated and got a job right away in advertising, which was really exciting. Yeah. And so that's sort of how I started. And so I started out as an art director. So in advertising, you work with creative partners. So an art director and a copywriter, and we come up with the ads together and we would write them together, but I would be really in charge of the visuals and that kind of stuff. And so in my first year, my partner, who was a guy, we wrote an ad for a tampon brand.
Yeah.
So one of the things about me is I always wanted to do non-traditional advertising. I didn't want to do typical female ads. So when we got stuck on this tampon brand, I was like, my partner and I were like, we're not going to do it the same way that they've been doing it. And at the time it was blue liquid, you know, in the ads.
It's like, what?
Yeah. You know, and this is a woman's body. So we came up with this really interesting demonstration, which was it was a white psych opened on an empty wine glass, hand came in, poured a bottle of wine into the glass. You saw it was red wine. And then another hand came in and put an open tampon into the top of the wine bottle. That hand then turned the bottle upside down, held it and shook it over a white tablecloth, and it said, "No tampon prevents leaks better."
Brilliant.
So that ran for 5 days before it got pulled. That was in Canada. And but it really, you know, it started the conversation. It really started to show that we're ready for a change. So
yeah. So did it get pulled because of some sort of backlash, or just get it pulled in terms of natural run of things?
No. It should have run for about a year. And so it got a bunch of complaints, all these letters that were people outraged that they saw a tampon and it went into a wine bottle and saw red.
Oh my God. Even though I thought Canada was supposed to be evolved.
Well, and especially you didn't see red on the tampon. It was just a white, clean tampon going in.
Yep.
So I thought that was sort of a badge of honor to have it pulled off to really like shake people up. But and it won an award in Cannes. We have an advertising award festival, and it won there. So that's a big deal. Mm-hmm. So that was sort of my beginning of advertising. And then, you know, I had a couple partners, and I was working with this woman near the end of my ad career. And we were freelancing for this company. And I just thought I'd tell you, like, you know, what it's like to be.
Yeah.
So I guess part of my journey is a female in my business world. And in advertising, it was pretty good. There were quite a few of us, but there were still obstacles that we had to come up against. And personally, I always saw those obstacles more as just a challenge. Like, mm-hmm. It was like, I'm female. You're not going to keep me away from doing this. I'm going to do it regardless. Mm-hmm. And so I'd find my way around it. And so I found I was working with a female partner, and we were asked to freelance on a beer commercial. And so we wrote these scripts, and it was a really high profile beer company. And the ads were really like funny, funny ads. And so we wrote scripts, and we found out that we were not allowed to present our work to the client. The client would fly in from America, and they would go right to the strip bar, and the male creative team would show up right afterwards, and they didn't have a choice. They had to go to the strip bar, and they would present all the work. And they presented one of our scripts, and the client loved it, and it was chosen, and it was made. Mm. But it had to be made by these two guys, because the client was never to know that we as women worked on it.
That is wild. It's back to like, you know, like pen names kind of thing.
Yeah. And this wasn't that long ago. So, but anyway, you know, my partner and I, we were known as this female team that wrote really like dark stuff. Some, you know, our stuff was always challenging and pushing the status quo. And there came a time where I was just thinking more about the visual aspect. So I got to the point in my ad career where I found that I was more interested in making the commercial. I was like visualizing, like, what's it going to look like? And what's the style mm-hmm. of film? And, you know, what's the genre? And less interested in actually coming up with the ideas and doing all the other work. Mm-hmm. And so I decided that I would transition to directing. And it had been done before in my business. There were a few guys that had become very successful TV commercial directors that mm-hmm. were ex art directors or writers, but there were no women that I knew of. And there were also very few female directors that I knew. I had a couple friends that were female directors, and, you know, and it was at a time where, you know, it was really hard to get work as a woman director, mm-hmm. but I'd always been that person that was up for the challenge. I was like, you know what? Doesn't matter. I can do it. I can figure it out. My work will stand out. And so I left my job, and I did this thing where I freelanced for 6 months, and then I would film for 6 months. And the freelance was what paid for my reel, because it's expensive, right? And
so you freelance, you mean like you freelance and then you filmed like the projects that you were working on, you mean?
Or? Yeah. So the way I did it is I would freelance at a bunch of different ad agencies as an art director, like my old career. And they would pay me, and then I would take 6 months off, and I would work on scripts for my for a reel. So that I had, because you can't, as a director, you have to have work in order to be represented. The way it works is you want to join a production company. The production company is almost like your agent in the acting world. Yeah. And so, but they're the people that go out and get you work. There's reps that find you work. So without a production company, it can be really difficult to, at least back then, to get work.
Yeah.
But in order for a production company to bring you on, you have to have commercials that show that you're good at what you do and what's your genre, right?
Wow, that's amazing. You took 6 months of the year to do that. I mean, that's incredible. Like,
yeah,
it's such a leap.
Yes. Yeah. And so what I did was I collaborated with my old writing partners, and they wrote scripts for me, or I'd write scripts with them. And then I would take those scripts and, you know, we'd figure out a brand and give it to the brand. And then I would pay for the crew and pull a crew together and film it. And then I worked with an editor editors that I had worked with in the past, mostly this one woman, you know, someone that I'd been collaborating with for years already. And all these people came together that I'd worked with on the other side of the business, came together to help me put together this reel.
Wow, that's incredible.
Yeah. And so by the end, I had 5 pieces, like a music video and 4 commercials that I was really happy with. And that's how I launched.
Wow.
But to get there, you know, it was challenging because I only had the income of that 6 months.
Yeah.
And then I had to make this stuff. And so, and I was also dating a guy who was in a band, and he was in a well-known band, and they were touring all the time. So they would invite me to join them sometimes. So,
hell yeah.
So I'd just get on the tour bus, but I wasn't filming. So I needed to be making money, right? Like I couldn't give up this precious time for my career. So a creative director, the same one that let me do the beer ads, allowed me to work remotely. And that, for that period of time, was unheard of. Like, nobody worked remotely, and especially on a tour bus with a band.
Yeah.
But he thought it was hilarious. He loved the story of it. He loved that I would be on the bus scribbling down these scripts. I would get to the venue, I'd run inside, get the payphone, and present the scripts to him, and then he could hear the music in the background, and I had to get off the phone.
That's amazing. That's so fun. That's so fun. And so how many years of the 6 months on, 6 months off did it take to get to launch?
It took a year and a half. Mm, yeah.
Wow.
So it was, yeah. And it took money, right? So all my money at the time when, you know, a lot of my friends were getting married, they're starting families, buying their first home, I was changing my career. And at that time, I had a boyfriend, but eventually we split up and I had to take the next step, which was like, okay, I've got my reel. I'm ready to be a director. And now, and I had a production company that was interested in me called Cineva. And the exec producer had been sort of mentoring me through this process because he had heard through the grapevine I was making the change. And so we had this really great relationship, and he brought me on. But, you know, the first year was hard because I was mostly doing projects that were free because I wanted stuff for my reel. And I was, you know, not making any money. I was living on like $25,000, $30,000. And after having like a great advertising salary. So it was a huge change for me, but I was so focused on what my end goal was. And I remember, you know, my family, they didn't live in Toronto, but they were very supportive emotionally of me and, you know, and would send food home and stuff like that.
Aww.
And my mom would send me, while I was doing all this, she'd write little cards and send them in the mail. And they would have some sort of inspirational quote or inspirational thought of how she knew I could do this. And it was stuff like that kept me going. That and friends inviting me over for dinner all the time.
That's all. And you were in Toronto at this time.
Yeah. Yeah. So that's, I spent, once I graduated from philosophy, I moved to Toronto and I was living in Toronto the whole time. I'm from London, Ontario. Yes, there's another London. But then, you know, so then what happened was I was doing these free jobs and they were super creative and I was winning awards with them and people were starting to get to know me. And the people that I'd worked for before as an art director hired me as a director. But actually, I'll step back a little bit. When I launched myself, as I said, it was at a time when, you know, female directors, nobody really, we didn't exist. And so I curated my work so that it would come across as male. So no one would know. It still had it was my voice, but it was like, I'd been writing beer ads. I'd been writing, you know, all these different, working on different projects. Like I wasn't going to suddenly become all girly and do like super feminine things. So
yeah,
it was comedy. It was like smart, beautiful comedy that looked good because that didn't really exist at the time. And I changed, like kept my name as Lewis. I didn't go as Shelley. It was just my last name, Lewis. And I didn't want people to know I was female. I wanted them to look up my reel, fall in love with my work, and then get me on a call and then find out that I was female.
Yep.
And then they'd be in.
Mm, wow. Wow. Did you ever have people be surprised? Like,
yeah.
like let their surprise show?
Oh my God. I was at a board meeting and this guy came in and I was sitting at the board in the boardroom table and mm-hmm. my exec was there and this other guy. And so we were sitting and chatting and he's like, okay, so I got to get going soon. So like, when's the director coming? And I was like, oh, I'm Lewis. I'm the director. He's like, oh, I thought it was some guy. I was like, no, like really caught him off guard. And you know, that happened. That one actually didn't go any further than that. I don't know if it was, he just wasn't interested in what I was selling or that I was female, but that project didn't go further. But the other projects did. Like when people were surprised, they're kind of like, oh, this is cool. This is great. I had no idea.
Yeah. Yeah. Wow. Cool. And you have so much tongue-in-cheek humor in your work. Where did the humor come from? Were you following comedy? Like, what's your journey in?
My family. It's from my family. Mm. I've grown up with a family that has a very, very dark, sarcastic sense of humor. Mm-hmm. And from a young age, that has always influenced me. And, you know, you would get not more attention, but you could hold your own in the family if you had witty, fast retorts
yep.
back. And I think, you know, and I grew up doing sports. I grew up, you know, I was on the varsity rowing team in university. I did all this stuff that was just like, maybe like a bit more mainstream. You know, my family wasn't mainstream. Like my parents got married when they were teenagers. My grandparents got married when they were teenagers. You know, we lived, my parents were like kids raising kids, right? And so everything was like really playful and you could do anything. My grandfather always never treated me like a girl. He treated me like a person. And for that generation back in those days to do that, that was really unique. And so when I went to university, I think I kind of toned down my personality because I was trying to fit in a little bit. And I remember this woman who's my best friend now, we'd been friends for a couple of years. And one day she's like, when did you get so funny? And I was like, what? But I realized she was getting to know me and I was feeling comfortable with her. Like I felt like with my family. And so humor came out more. And then, you know, I was really like, I loved Bill Murray films. I watched Bill Murray.
I could see that. Now that you say that, that makes sense.
Yeah. I've watched Stripes. I don't watch movies in repeat very often, but I've watched Stripes probably about 50 or 60 times. And Night Court was another one. And those two films growing up, I was, you know, a teenager, growing up watching them, watching the humor, understanding sort of the comedic pause, I think that sort of inspired me. And then when I got into advertising, you know, you get people, if it's witty, you pull people in. And when we were two women working together and being funny, you know, people were kind of like surprised about that. I don't know why. So,
you know, there was so much discrimination at that time of like,
yeah,
women, and there still is, you know, like women can't be funny or whatever.
Yeah. But it really, all the comedy just came from just doing it, just writing it, to be honest.
That's great. I mean, I think that's, just like, how do people get funny? You just do it. You do it a lot for, you know, for everyone in comedy. Yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
And your visuals too are so beautiful. And I'm wondering, like, I asked this because I've heard different directors talk about like their, how they get their inspiration, like Barbara Streisand. And this is, I mean, what a budget she had. She flew to Europe to study when she was directing, to study Rembrandt paintings that she wanted to have, you know, she went on this trip to Europe for research purposes. The film budget, I guess, paid for it. Where do you get your inspiration?
Well, it's funny you say that because I have this philosophy, which is why I think the director lifestyle is such a different lifestyle from every day. Because, you know, when I was working at an ad agency, I went into an office every single day. Mm-hmm. And it was that building. As a director, when I have free time, if I'm not on set or if I'm not writing, then I'm working. And my working is I'm going to art galleries. I'm going to a different part of the town, city I haven't been before, something that's like really gritty and unusual and dirty, you know, rather than pristine and beautiful. Or I'll go on a trip and I will go to Europe. And, you know, I always revolve my trips around art in some way. So, you know, going to art galleries, like you say that about Meryl Streep. It's so funny because when I was when I was in art school, my trip to Europe revolved around where the galleries were and going to gallery after gallery after gallery. And then as I've become more film oriented, it film does a lot to influence me, and not in the way of like telling me what to put out there. It's more, you know, the whole theory of you need to know the rules in order to break them.
Yep.
So I watch, you know, when I'm stuck, I will throw on the Criterion Channel and I'll just watch a random movie. I won't know who the director is. I'll just pick an era. And sometimes it's like 1930s and sometimes it's 80s. Sometimes it's female directors. Sometimes it's male or black male. You know, it's always very different. It could be documentary or whatever. And I'm constantly thinking about it so that I can think differently. Because once I see that stuff, like they're not, most of them have no relevance to the kind of work that I do.
Yeah.
But the language, the film language seeps in. You know, there might be a really interesting shot that I want to try my own version of somewhere else. Like I was watching The Player the other day with Robert Altman directed it, and he was being interviewed and he talked about his 8-minute opening shot and the fact that, you know, no one had done 8 minutes before. And so so I find things like that really inspiring. Also fashion, like clothing patterns I can sew. I'm not great at it, but I can sew. So as a kid, I was always going to fabric stores and looking at the different textures and different things. And you'd never know it now because my wardrobe is mostly black. But there was a period of time, especially when I was in advertising still, I was kind of feeling my way around about being different. Mm-hmm. And that was the moment where I suddenly changed and I started wearing wigs and I started wearing really bright colors and patterns and really weird outfits. And I would make my own outfits and put them together. And you'd never know that looking at how boring I look now. But all that stuff just sort of, you know, accumulates. And I do, you know, I'm building sets sometimes, Or I'm shooting in a 1970s space, but I want everything around it to feel maybe a little bit fashion-y or modern or, you know, whatever it is. I pick the era, I pick the moment, I pick what it looks like. And that has a huge influence on my work.
What kind of art do you go find when you're traveling?
It's always modern.
Hmm.
Always modern art. And I think the reason is I feel like I'm really attracted to stuff that is in reaction to something. So modern art was in reaction to the old traditional paintings and especially the religious paintings. So that really appealed to me, you know, that moment of change. Also how war influenced a lot of things too, like the old German propaganda posters, you know, I find that really interesting, or sort of the USSR, the posters that came out of there, or the posters that have come out of any time of resistance, you know, like the civil rights movement, all of that stuff. Like I'm always seeking out that stuff at the moment of change. And I do the same with film too. You know, the new wave directors, right now I'm into the new director, which was the '70s, you know, when they were going from Marilyn Monroe style films to Easy Rider and Bonnie and Clyde, that kind of stuff, MASH. And so there seems to be a theme for me. It's always about breaking the mold. It's about change. And also something now that I can get more interested in and behind is watching film from women.
Yeah. And I think like you bring up such a great point of that, like you're making a specific art form and you can get inspiration from other art forms. You don't just need to like, and you probably shouldn't only feed on the things in your genre. You go feed somewhere else because otherwise you're just recycling in many ways.
Yeah. And I also think that, I think there's less now, but there is this sort of stereotype of what advertising is, right? And the kind, I mean, you've seen my work. So the kind of advertising I do, it's like little mini short films in 30 seconds. But I feel that advertising when done right, and I know it's problematic times because you are selling products, but there is a way to impact culture and to really create change. And to me, that's been really important. And I've tried to include that in my work. And, you know, if it's showing now that I can be female and use my name, I have been focusing more on, you know, female stories and what that looks like. And my whole philosophy is it takes a year or two to do a film, right? Or a TV show. So when culture is changing, you're not going to see that change on the screen for a while. But in a TV commercial, I can work on a script and it's going to be on air in 2 months. And so by using people of color, you know, finally being able to show someone other than a white guy in the commercial or, you know, a cis white guy, you know, you can really represent the world. And that's the other thing that I like about it. And so I think my politics influence me, my, you know, I've always been about equality for people and who need it. There's a lot of fun.
Yeah. And, yeah, for sure.
And so that is a really big influencer in my work, even though you might not see it as clearly as it feels to me, because I am working in the constraint of a brand.
Right. I mean, I feel it. I mean, I feel like it's like the casting choices that were made, and it's like the empathy that you're able to give. And you do have like the demonstration, the climate change project you work on, and even the I thought the dance project you work on, I felt like it was so, I felt like, wow, you really captured that, like the gender exploration. It felt like they were exploring gender and that's what was happening in the film.
Yeah.
I feel like this way a lot too. Like, I feel like I do these characters and then I do stand up, and sometimes I'm not like hitting things over the head. I've like given up. I don't want to hit anything over the head.
Yeah.
And even when I did Melania Trump impersonation, I would do these like esoteric, sometimes oblique things. And I'm like, well, you know what? If you want to get it, you have to pay attention. I don't know what to tell you. It's like, it's all in there. I don't know what to do. I can't dictate for you, but you know.
Yeah.
But do you ever feel like you're not understood?
I don't think I feel like I'm not understood. What's happened since the Me Too movement is that in my business in particular, mm-hmm. it has opened up. It has opened up for women specifically and a lot of other people that are considered minorities in the business, right? And yep. and that's amazing. But it's slow. It's slow. And
yeah.
And I am one of the people that is helping to make these changes because I'm the person that sort of came up when there weren't opportunities, right? And so yep. so I'm still pushing through and I'm still like trying to be at the top of my game. And for the most part, I see a lot less work than the guys that are at the same level as me do see. But I take advantage of that. And so when, you know, there's this thing called, it was called Free the Bid and now it's called Free the Work. And it was started by this mm-hmm. female director, Alma. And the whole idea was to get ad agencies and clients to agree to have one woman bidding on every project. At first it was one woman and then it was, you know, someone that's underrepresented mm-hmm. on each project, which is, I think, fantastic. And even if they, because when you're pitching, you pitch against, generally you're one of three directors that's pitching on a job. And if you win the project, then it's yours and you get paid. And if you don't, you go on to pitch another one. And so sometimes they were pitching three male directors and then someone who's underrepresented. And a lot of times mm-hmm. you feel like you're just, you know, there as a token, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. But I'm okay with that because I just, like before, I just try to, I take advantage of it. Like if they're going to get me, if they're going to sit and listen to a pitch of mine, then I'm going to pitch as hard as I can. And I've had to do that for every project because there's less opportunities. So every single time I'm up to bat, I have to hit a home run. Mm. You know, I don't have those in betweens. And so what I've found is because of that kind of mentality, sometimes I've won the project and nobody's expected me to. And then other times I'm like, it's between me and another guy. And then they come back to me for another project. So it's just, I wish that there were, it's a weird bias because you don't really see it, but you still feel it. Like the majority mm-hmm. of the work is still being done by mostly male directors.
Yeah. And that's, I've done a bunch of commercials and I had come across your Instagram profile and I was like, wait, a commercial director who's not like a cishet white dude? I'm like, what? It's something I haven't really encountered before. And one of the reasons I definitely wanted to talk to you. And what would you, if you had your druthers, like what would be your, you said you want more work. Would it be more commercial work? Are there other things you've been dreaming up?
Yeah. I mean, commercial work 100% because I really enjoy doing commercials. When it's like that beautiful storytelling, you know, you look at Lance Accord's work and he does really beautiful storytelling, or Mike Mills. He doesn't do as many commercials mm-hmm. now, but I always admired his kind of storytelling. And that's the kind of work I would love to be able to do. Like when, you know, mm-hmm. and I'm getting there. Like when I did the PetSmart one, that was a really fun opportunity to do mm-hmm. when the people were all singing. And you know, but I do want to do TV. I do want to do feature films. And so I am writing stuff. And, you know, it's very hard to, it's another transition. It's another, I say it's hard, but it's exciting because it's one of those challenges. Like, how do I transition into doing all this other stuff? And so, you know, there are a lot of things that I am doing. Like I am shadowing on TV shows. I am writing my own short film. I have ideas about things like that. And And it's a process, right? You have to keep all of these things going, because as soon as a commercial comes in, everything, my life goes on hold, and then I'm focusing on that, mm-hmm. right?
Yeah, yeah. It's like people, that my friend had a great diagram. It was like a triangle, and it's like the part above the water was just the tip of the triangle. And that's the part you see in an artist's work. And then there's all the other stuff that you don't.
Yeah, that you don't. And then on top of that, I mean, you looked at my work. It is very diverse, the kind of work that mm-hmm. I do. And, you know, I've got work that is run and gun filming. I have work that it's building sets and everything is like yeah. color matching. And then I have work that, you know, doing a dance film festival. I was commissioned to do that dance film. And mm-hmm. I didn't know anything about dancing. So I had to do the work. I had to do the research. And I talked to people that were dancers and talked to people that had worked on dance films before. And I started to dive into the film genre to see what exists. And then, you know, when I was doing the PetSmart one, which is like the musical genre, again, mm-hmm. I went back and looked at everything that is out there so that I could get a sense of who I wanted to be for this. And I do visual effects. I worked on the stage, the virtual production stage called The Volume that they shoot The Mandalorian in. And all of that stuff takes time and research. And that's what you got to do in your downtime. So you're going to an art gallery, or you're watching something online, or you're going and, you know, going to a seminar or going to a talk that, you know, Zadie Smith is giving because you just like her writing, right?
Yeah. Yeah. And it feels like too, like you're definitely always on the cutting edge of technology.
Yeah.
Like you were saying, like the phantom cameras, and then also like the Sport Check commercial, like it was just, I mean, when I watched that, I showed that to my partner. I was like, look at this. And it was just like mind blowing. You have three screens. Everyone needs to go check it out. You have like, and there's a behind the scenes video too. And there's like a screen above the actors and screens around the actors. They don't move, but it looks like they're moving, and it's not green screen. I mean, it's also like, what a joy as an actor to like actually have the stuff be in the place.
Yeah. Well, and that's why I think The Volume can be really interesting for actors, because you're not shooting on a green screen. You have things to interact with. It also helps with lighting, but it's really interesting because it's a whole new way of thinking. And again, I had to teach myself that process and do, but you know, that's also been one of my themes, because I didn't go to art school. I mean, I did go to art school, sorry. I didn't go to film school, and I didn't know a lot about film, but I was like, I'm going to do this. And so as soon as I started to do it, I was reading books about cinematography. I was learning about lensing. I was, you know, learning as much as I could about film, and I was still shooting on film because the transition hadn't fully happened to digital yet. And then as soon as we got into digital, I made sure I was like one of the first people in my community doing it, shooting on cameras that people hadn't used yet and finding ways to do it. Because I found the more I know, especially being female, the more knowledgeable I am, the more experience I have, you know, there's a better reason to, you know, want to give me a project where I can have that creative freedom. And people do, like, people trust me with that.
Yeah. I mean, if it was my manner, it says like, you have to be undeniable, like undeniable. So it's a question we always ask everyone. What was the moment you knew, we call it our misfit moment, when you knew that the traditional life was not for you?
So it was after I'd finished university, or I finished university, I finished art college, and I was in the workforce for about a year. And I was in advertising, and suddenly I started to feel like I could be creative. I could be different. I could be myself. And I started to feel suffocated by my life. And I just decided that I was going to change everything. And so I broke up with my boyfriend that I lived with, who was a really nice guy, but he was on a more traditional trajectory than I was. And I started saying yes to everything. I was not allowed to say no. And so that put me into all kinds of different environments and situations that I wasn't expecting. And then I was like, okay, I'm going to play around with fashion. I'm going to play around with the way that I look. And I started wearing wigs and I started wearing all these, I was going vintage shopping and I'd find like this vintage slip that was mostly lace at the bottom in a hot pink. And I'd wear that as a skirt and with my Cleopatra black wig and my fake eyelashes. And I remember going to a party and I ran into someone that I used to go to university with. And he looked at me and he said, "Oh my God, why are you wearing a wig? Why are you so weird now?" And I was like,
yes.
This is it. Like, yes.
Yes.
That was my mom.
Yes. This is the sound. I love it. Hell yes. Hell yes. I love this because I used to throw a party called Victoria and we would have a dress up booth for people to get dress up in different wigs and outfits and makeup and put on. Sometimes you just need to change the outside. It changes the outside. I'm a physical actor. So I really believe that. Just do it. Just throw it on. See what happens.
Yeah. And I never look back.
Hell yeah. We also ask people what their misfit inspiration is, misspiration, if you will, what you might read, look to, when you have those down moments.
So for me, how do I say it? I mentioned it a little bit earlier. I actually go to the Criterion Channel and I will pull out a film that I haven't seen before that I know nothing about. And I will watch that and I will like fully immerse myself in it. And then the other part of that is I read biographies. I read biographies of successful people and they might be creative. They might not be creative. I really like to hear how hard people's journeys have been and, and how they come around to the other side. And I think it makes me feel like there's a kinship and it allows me to feel that whatever I'm doing, you know, I can find my own path because the hardest thing I find in my business is the path isn't set up for you. Right? If I wanted to be a lawyer, I mean, yeah, there's like ups and downs, of course, but you know what that path is. And you go and do the work. But with ours, like, there's a turn at every corner. Like, I'm working on a script here. Is that going to lead to something? I don't know. Or I get a call for a TV commercial and I go do that commercial. Is that, or a music video, or I meet somebody. You're like, I just don't know what that path is. And so seeing different people's paths written out on paper actually makes me feel normal in my.
Like you don't feel crazy. You're like, yeah, just like other people. So much as when I interview people on this podcast, I'm like, oh yeah, I'm not crazy. Like, it's all the things that you see and you feel. And like, yeah, I also like to read biographies as well. And you're like, oh, okay, I get it. Like it's always hard and no one ever knows what they're doing.
No, they don't. And then the other thing that I do is, so when I've done a big project and I come home and I'm exhausted and I need to start something new, it's kind of like clean and reorganize. Like I will fully reorganize a room or fully reorganize a bookshelf or clean out clothing or something that makes everything feel new and fresh again. And it drives my husband nuts, but it is, it's a way of reorganizing my brain.
Totally. And Julia Cameron recommends this in The Artist's Way. Did you get it from that?
No, I actually haven't read that. That's one that I haven't read.
Me too. Well, that's amazing. I like to clean my bathtub after something really big.
It's weird, right? But
yeah, it just feels, you just like, I just need to clean. I need to like, you know, I need to put everything away that I've used for this project. I need to just like kind of get it visually and spiritually like out of myself just to rest from it too. Cool. I have a question from one of my characters. Actually, Carmela is doing the mini episodes these days. So she's getting a lot of airtime, but she really wanted to come through. So if she's coming, she's coming for you. Okay.
Should I be afraid?
I don't know. But people tend to like her. I don't know, but she's got some lip. But hi, Shelly. How's it going? I'm Carmela Ravoli. I'm coming from Boca Raton, Florida, for all her things. Don't listen to her. She gets all whatever. She gets embarrassed to me sometimes. But the thing is, I'm very entertaining. So okay. So listen, I'm in Boca Raton. I'm from Brooklyn originally. You know, people, I go back up to New York, though, you know, for family parties and other shit. So everyone's coming down to Florida. All these people are coming down and they're crowding me out and I can't stand it. And there's too much traffic. I left New York because I don't want to deal with traffic. And now there's all this traffic in Florida. You're great at advertising. How can I make a commercial to convince people not to come to Florida?
Well, that's easy. Basically, you just have to think about what is your biggest deterrent to get people not to come to Florida.
To get not people, maybe I say we don't want you or something. I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't care.
Yeah, you could do that. You could, I mean, basically you just have to figure out what is your idea. What is, you don't want people to come to Florida. So how do you approach it? Do you approach it from a perspective of being really blatant about it and just telling them not to? Or do you use reverse psychology? And do you promote these other places that they should be going to instead? Or do you, because, you know, there's a lot of, right now, there's a lot of material out there that is showing the death and decay of all our major cities. But, you know, when you live in these major cities, it doesn't look like the visuals are sending. So I don't know if that's the right way, because I think people are really, they're skeptical of that. So I think you just have to find a way to attract them to the places you want them to go.
I like this. Maybe I could, I like the reverse psychology thing. So maybe I could just, instead of Florida, you know, they always have the palm trees and stuff. I'll just have a pile of garbage.
Yeah.
There we go.
Yeah.
I'm just going to have Florida. That's the new logo. I'm just going to have Florida over the pile of garbage.
Well, and then you can do, and then you show, then, you know, the other palm trees in California, right? And showing, if it's for retiree people, someone in their leisure suit hanging out with their glamorous glasses, having a little cocktail on the beach under the palm tree. So, you know, you do the same kind of palm tree. You just show the two different places and show how amazing. You know, maybe it's a woman in her 70s or not 70s, but let's say 90s in her bikini looking very fancy. And, you know, there's a young cabana person who's, you know, bringing drinks over.
You know, that's, I like that a lot. You know, I got to get me one of those too. So the, what we could do is we could also, cause people who come down to Florida are cheap. They don't want to pay for things like in California, you got to pay taxes. They don't like that. So what we do is we put, cause there's some palm tree-y places in like Mississippi on the coast and we'll try to get them to go there. We'll do a fake out. We'll do a show how, look how beautiful the coast of this is. It's better than Florida. You know, maybe it's just Mississippi better than Florida. And then everyone's going to go there. I think Mississippi's on the coast. I don't know geography. Don't hold me to this. And don't email me with the correct thing. Okay. Whatever. The thing near Florida with the palm tree. Okay, people. Those places, we're going to get them to go. I like this. Shelly, I like this a lot. All right, well, we're on to something. Thank you so much. I'm going to go get, I'll get my nephew to do it. My game, he'll help me. Okay. All right. All right. Thank you, Shelly. See you soon. Come visit me in Boca Raton. You're invited. No one else is.
Thank you. I will bring my best velour leisure suit.
Oh, thank you. It matches my mind's red. So just be complimentary in the color. Okay. All right. Thank you. All right. She's pouring herself for a martini. She's so excited. So thanks for hanging out.
She's a character, that lady.
She is a character. My goodness gracious. All right. So where should people come find you, hang out with you, look for what you have going next?
Yeah. So I have a website. It's ShellyLewisFilms.com. I'm also with a production company called Magnetic Field in America. And it's owned by the Russo brothers and Justin Lin. And that's where you can find me to do all my work. And then in Canada, I'm with Suniva.
Lovely, lovely, lovely. I love that you have the by country representation.
Yeah. Well, and also in France, yeah. I'm with a company called IC as well. So I do have European representation as well. And yeah, it is, I do like to work in all these different countries because the work is different in each one. There's different sensibilities mm-hmm. and it's always interesting to figure that out.
Yeah, hell yeah. As a comedian, I love the same. It's super fun. Cool. Well, I will look for you in all of the above. Look forward to seeing what you got next.
Thank you. It was lovely speaking with you today.
Well, there you have it. You can follow the podcast on my page at Lauren Logie. Updates and inside info on my email list, LaurenLogie.com. Thank you to Annie McCutcheon for editing, Edward Silla at Radio Misfits Podcast Network, and Maddie McLennan for making the podcast art. Thanks to our listeners for bringing us back for another season. We'll see you soon.
The proceeding was a presentation of the Radio Misfits Podcast Network. Find our other great shows on iTunes, Stitcher Radio, and at RadioMisfits.com. Thank you.